League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Well, hello again. Welcome back to the Tottenham Way podcast, guaranteed to bring you all the inside news with regards to the club without ever drifting into the murky world of insider trading. God forbid. Tom Allnut of The Times is here, and so too is the time traveler extraordinaire, Tom Barkley of The Sun, who since the end of last season, I think, has traveled the entire world following our beloved club and the England under-21s, and is back as fresh as a daisy to give us all the inside news about the tour. So first things first, Tom B, there's only one place to start, and that's with Joe Lewis, which must have come as a thunderbolt to everybody towards the end of the tour. What is the latest situation regarding that?
Yeah, hi guys. Great to speak to you again and nice to be back in England. It's been a crazy summer, 5 weeks, barring a few days back at home in between the 21s and Spurs tour. And yeah, that was basically all dropped on my final day, the day of the Lion City Sailors match. I left the next day, and to be honest, I was pretty tired by the end of that. So it was probably the last thing that I really fancied getting my teeth into on that day. But that's the way it works with news. So yeah, as we know, Joe Lewis, who Spurs have insisted is not actually the owner, despite a lot of reports going with that initially, because, you know, I think most people just presume that was the case. Basically how it works is he ceded control last year. He wasn't a director, and basically, his family's trust is the majority shareholder of Enic, which is the majority shareholder of Tottenham. But he, I don't believe, is actually one of the beneficiaries from it. It's very long-winded, as you can tell from me trying to explain it there. So no wonder people get confused by it. But yeah.
But the one thing, Tom, that confused me with regards to that, when they suddenly said, oh, no, he's not running the club. Only 2 or 3 days earlier, there were headlines saying that Lewis was telling Levy he's got to sell Kane. I mean, I don't know what was going on, but there was definite, you know, inconsistencies between that and then what happened when the story broke.
Yeah, that is a totally fair point. No wonder people would be confused by that. All I can say is that story about Joe Lewis suggesting that Harry must be sold if he can't sign a new contract didn't come from Spurs. Or from the Spurs end. So, you know, they have been very quiet on Harry throughout this whole summer. So I'm not saying that isn't the case or not. I'm just saying that wasn't from Tottenham's side. So when it comes to his influence on being the owner or not being the owner, that's the only thing that they've really sort of explained as a result of the Joe Lewis story involving being charged on, I think, is it 16 counts of insider trading, 13 of the first 13 of which can land him 20 years in jail. So it's pretty serious stuff. The charges have been described as a brazen scheme of insider trading, to do with he's alleged to have tipped off those closest to him, from friends, lovers, to even his pilots, in terms of tips ahead before information was made public about various businesses. Looking through the indictment, there is quite a lot of, it makes for a fascinating reading. Obviously, I think as I was flying back, pretty much he was due in court. So we still have to see how this all plays out. His lawyer's been very, he's defending him very, you know, very vigorously.
Oh yeah, Yeah, I mean, he's a man of impeccable integrity, etc., etc. So he's obviously can afford the very best legal defense, and I'm sure this is going to go on and on. But Tom A, and I know that you're looking at this from the outside as well, but doesn't reflect well on the club, does it? The ownership, and it must make life even more awkward for Daniel Levy. However, the next few weeks pan out.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Marcus. It's almost like the one part of the club that we sort of forgot about that hasn't been kind of embroiled in controversy this year now has. There's also the owner. We forgot about that, as well as the sporting director, the chairman, the manager, the star player.
The story about the tea ladies coming next, and this is the most shocking one of all, apparently.
Yeah.
But not the owner, Tom, to be fair.
But not the owner, yeah. Asterisk, it's the owner. I mean, to be fair with the owner thing, I mean, it's not uncommon for newspapers and media outlets to kind of, summarize. I just did it there with Fabio Paratici. You know, his official title was what, managing director of sport thing, football or something, you know, and I called him a sporting director. It's easier for publications to kind of just classify someone as something easy for everyone to understand. You know, no one's going to say Joe Lewis, the owner who actually gave up, you know, some of his shares in October. So I'm not surprised by that. I'm not surprised the club didn't kind of challenge those reports either. I liked that in the court, he's now awaiting trial, but he pleaded not guilty, but the judge in New York required him to surrender his passport and also banned him from using his super yacht. I didn't really, I just thought that was maybe a slightly kind of little sort of petty punishment. Oh yeah, you have to wait trial, but for now you can't enjoy your biggest asset and your swimming pools and your tennis courts. I mean, I guess the other thing to kind of think about here is obviously the question of a sale. You know, for ages now, Tottenham have been open to offers, essentially. Take that, you know, as it may. I mean, the asking price has been quite high, I think, according to the market value. But equally, they have been open to offers. And you do wonder if this might accelerate that process, if the kind of Qatari interest, for example, might crystallize a little bit in light of this latest story. I mean, it's not a good thing for Spurs. Equally, you know, I saw Ange Postecoglou was asked about it in one of his press conferences. Tom was probably there. I don't know how much this filters down to the team, to the dressing room, to the manager. You know, I think this is a political issue. It's a legal issue for Tottenham to deal with. They'll say it's not for them to deal with, but I don't think it's going to affect Spurs' start of the season or anything like that.
No. Well, I'm sure that when Spurs play Shakhtar at the weekend in the 86, isn't he? In the 86th minute, there'll be a massive show of support from everybody because he's clearly very loved by the Tottenham faithful. Let's move on to more important issues, the tour. And obviously there was a lot of rain, but there was a Richarlison hat trick. I mean, sum it up. Tom B, did you enjoy it? Do you feel it was a success? What sense of excitement do you have now that you're back having watched it all?
Well, from a journalist's point of view, I thought it was definitely a success. We got some really good interviews out of it. We're going to talk about one in a minute, but we got to sit down with Ange Postecoglou, which was fascinating. He tells such great stories. It's so ironic that he talks about how he, you know, just doesn't do small talk and he finds that really awkward. Because being a storyteller as opposed to just, you know, chit chat in between things is very different. But he's such a good raconteur. I really enjoyed that. So that was great. But yeah, you know, from his point of view, I mean, I asked him this in that press conference after the Lion City Sailors match about just the tour as a whole not being ideal. So let's start with the fact that the first game against West Ham, you know, he didn't have Son, he didn't have Tongi and Ndombele, Ndombele would have played in that game, but he picked up a knock in the open training session at the Wacker just before then. I don't think Son would have played because, you know, he had two sessions, but it meant that, which would have been less of a deal had he not had the second game rained off and the third game not be against the competitive team they wanted to play. So that sort of robbed him of that opportunity to have those players. Then, as I said, they went on to Bangkok, where the press conference ahead of the game was ambushed by the German reporter from Bild, holding up a shirt, asking asking Ange if the shirt of Kane on the back looked good. And
I mean, who says Germans don't have a sense of humour? Yeah, we're still busting a gut about that one, aren't we?
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. And the fact that Harry's, obviously his future, just sort of hung over everything throughout the tour was another big part. And then, you know, as I said, going on to play against a team that they weren't planning on playing against in Singapore. They wanted to play Roma, which would have been a much more of an acid test for all the players. I just don't know how much he could have garnered from it. Yes, it was great that Richarlison got a hat. Well, not great. It was good that Richarlison got a hat trick after all the difficulties we know about last season. And, you know, Ange talked him up afterwards and is a big fan of his, which he's going to need to be if Harry does go. But I just don't know, for all the 20,000 miles they travelled all over that part of the world, I just don't know how much it would have been helpful to Postecoglou, as those long trips always can be, aren't ideal, as David Moyes said it after the West Ham game, but particularly because of the problems they encountered. It's just making the fact that they played Brentford away in a couple of weeks, the preparation it has not been ideal at all from my perspective.
No. Well, listen, we'll talk about the Harry Kane situation in just a moment. But you mentioned it was good from a journalistic point of view, and you've come up with a fantastic article, interview in The Sun with Eric Dyer, relating in particular to Dele Alli. Were you expecting to get that sort of an emotional response when you sat down to do that?
No, not at all. So often how it works on tour, we have all these events with players at where they're doing some sort of charity event. I think some of the guys went to speak to Pedro Porro around Perth Zoo, which sounded quite fun. We haven't done that interview out yet, but it's not always all of us who go, because sometimes it's just not possible, but we do end up sort of sharing the quotes around. But it was just me on this one with Eric, even though the Daily Mail and Ali Gold at Football London have got it as well. And I only had 10 minutes with him, or less what I thought. It ended up being 15 minutes. And I knew I wanted to ask him about Dele, because obviously they were so close. And Dele, in that amazing interview, probably the most shocking football interview I've ever witnessed, to be honest, the one with Gary Neville. There's so many revelations in it. And as I said, he mentioned Eric as being a great friend and someone who sort of confronted him at his time at Spurs, that it felt... You know, I felt like I really had to ask him about it. And because I didn't have very long, I decided to go straight in with it from the off. And I don't think he was quite expecting it. And that's probably what caught him so emotional, to become so emotional about it, the fact that we went straight into it. And I got the sense that he hadn't really thought about it too much since the interview came out, and maybe hadn't really sort of processed his feelings about it. I don't know, I could be wrong on that, but that was the sense I got. And, you know, at first, when I asked him just his general thoughts about it, he took his time and was saying things like, it was difficult to watch, he said, you know, many times, and eventually sort of put some words together about feeling like he could have done more, which is something he returned to throughout the conversation. But then when I asked him about Dele's revelation about obviously what he went through as a child, which is absolutely horrendous, and then about the sleeping tablets at Tottenham, because that's when he, you know, Eric and Dele played together, how much he sort of knew about it and what he felt about it, that's when he literally just broke down. And it took quite a long time, and I felt quite bad, to be honest, pushing him on it. But he did say, no, it's okay. You know, I am happy to talk about this, albeit he didn't want to say anything he hadn't said to Dele himself. And, you know, there were a few moments in it which were really quite sort of heartbreaking to listen to, about how, so obviously Dele's been in rehab, or was in rehab for six weeks. And Eric knew about that, but Eric got married, as you well know, Marcus.
Yeah.
And Dele was there, but Eric, knowing that, you know, what Dele was going through, said to Dele, you know, just checking, are you still coming, thinking that, you know, he might not be able to, given what he was going through. And the response was, you know, that Dele was, his first thing was that he was insulted that Eric even asked, because they're such close friends, that of course he was going to be there. And it really sort of spoke to just how close they are. And I don't know about Tom, but I've interviewed so many players over the years that they're often their best mates are almost academy players, the ones that they were coming up with, rather than in the professional game. Now, I know Dele and Eric were very young and were together a lot for a long time at Tottenham and England. But I really got the sense of just how close they actually were together as mates. And yeah, it was hard to listen to, hard to see him like that, hard to ask those questions, to be honest, but I kind of felt like I had to. And hopefully, you know, people can really appreciate his honesty from this particular interview.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, Tom, if you've had a similarly emotional experience. I mean, of such heartfelt comments from Dyer, and I think all Spurs fans, I think everybody in the world of football just hopes as well that Dele Alli, I mean, that was one of the things as well that Eric kept saying, you know, he's still a young man, he's only 27 years of age, and if he has been able to sort out a few of the issues, let's hope that he reproduces his best form for Everton next season. I think everybody would want that to happen.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that Eric, I mean, we remember now going back, you know, there were so many kind of funny videos of them together, you know, the club really sort of dined out on this kind of really lovely friendship that was very obvious. It was a very genuine friendship that everyone could see. You know, they got on so well. It was such a natural kind of chemistry they had and still have, seemingly. But interesting that even Eric wasn't obviously aware of the extent of Dele's problems, his addiction to sleeping pills, which kind of shows, doesn't it, that I think, you know, it's not just the media and the wider public and fans and, you know, who didn't know about this. It was even people who were very close to him who were also unaware of what was going on. I mean, did you get a sense, Tom, that he was, I don't know, happy to sort of talk about it, that he would have talked about it more if you'd had a longer interview, or was it something that he felt slightly sort of awkward getting the words out? How did you, or was there some kind of relief for him? I mean, how did the kind of interview go down in terms of your, I don't know, sense of how he was feeling about it?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely felt like, at times I felt guilty feeling like I'd asked him these questions, which maybe he wasn't quite expecting, although I did, you know, he was briefed before that I would ask him about Dele, but I think the fact that I came straight out with it, as I said, because I knew I didn't have very long and it was the main subject. I mean, there's actually lots of other stuff about his own situation, which we're going to use at another time, which I think is really interesting on his own situation at Spurs. I'm one of those people, you know, obviously from a journalist point of view, it's fascinating to hear, and it's, I think, what fans would be really interested in. But I was very much half expecting him either to say, I don't want to talk about this, or maybe to later think all those things I said, I'd just rather we didn't talk, you know, you didn't put that out there, which I would have been totally fine with. But there was none of that. And actually, you know, there were times when, because we didn't have that long, you know, we were ready to sort of move on to the next subject, but I was saying, look, I just want to make sure that Eric has said everything he wants to say on this subject, because I really wouldn't want to just ask one or two questions that he wasn't quite prepared for, and then that's the stuff that comes out without him feeling like he really could talk, really, you know, give the full his full feelings in that relatively brief time. And yeah, he afterwards seemed to be fine with it, and was okay with it, which, as I said, I really felt like I wanted to make sure was okay. But yeah, just I've done a couple of really emotional interviews before. I mean, one that stands out is with Chris Eagles, who used to play for Man United. You might remember him and his I think his girlfriend at the time, I think they're married, they had a stillborn baby, and they wanted to tell me the story about that. And that was horrendous to listen to all of that. So it's not the first time going through these kind of things, but it was, I think it was because it was in such a quick, brief period. And I was expecting, you know, a response that was, you know, quite profound and moving, but to be in there with him like that was a surprise. But as I said, it just shows the depth of feeling he has for Dele.
Sorry, Mark, just last point. I mean, I remember Dele in that interview, you know, you could tell that he was slightly reluctant. It was a slightly uncomfortable thing, wasn't there, where he was basically saying he was doing the interview sooner than he would have liked because the press were aware of him being in rehab. And I think he also, you know, said a couple of times, you know, people are going to write this, people are going to spin it, you know, possibly my mum and dad are going to come out and say something. He was basically kind of preempting a sort of a backlash and the sort of bad reactions to what he was saying, which I guess is natural given what he's been through. But actually, you know, for all that, there are also the kind of benefits and inverted commas of this kind of thing, where you have support and people close to him realizing and understanding the situation, and you would imagine not just kind of talking to newspapers, but also reaching out to him, I imagine, and extending their support and yeah. friendship to him. So I hope at least that is some comfort to him at this point.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting the point you make. Just thinking about Christian Romero, the interview that we did with him out in that was Perth as well, in Children's Hospital, and that was myself and Matt Barlow of the Mail, but Ali and Charlie Eccleshare at the Athletic, we obviously shared it all around. So those pieces have all went out, and Charlie and Ali in particular have got big followings from a Spurs point of view. And I think there was, what I was going to ask the question, basically putting the accusation to Romero that some people think he prioritizes playing for Argentina over Tottenham and cares more about Argentina. And he sort of really put a staunch defense about that and said, anyone who says that doesn't know me, sort of revealed he'd had offers this summer. That's why he's staying, and was really open about last season, the problems with Conte, between him and between the squad and Conte, but how much he was really keen to play his best years, to have the best years of his career at Spurs. And the reason I mention this is because of particularly Ali and Charlie's following, when they put that story out there, it seems like the reaction from the fans is has almost turned a bit on Christian Romero. They've really appreciated it. And I just think, I mean, maybe I'm just patting ourselves on the back here from a media point of view, but it just shows you, when you have an honest interview that's done in a forum that is, you know, away from the club, can have real power, and it can really affect people.
Definitely. Oh, I mean, you guys are the conduits between the players and the fans, and if your job is taken responsibly, which clearly it has been, then that has to help the players, that has to help communication, which is what life is all about. And I just thought that, you know, that the way that you and Eric Dier spoke, the fact it came over so strongly as well, that Dele Alli is obviously a top guy. It's not just a one-way relationship either, wasn't he? He said Dele has helped Eric at times, and we've all been guilty. I hope you didn't tell him that I did suggest that he was turning slower than the Titanic at one point last season, but I'm now right behind Eric Dier. I really hope that that Dele does the business. And likewise, that Romero story was fascinating. And more power to you guys and all the responsible journalists and broadcasters. Look for the right stories, and you can influence things so positively in that regard. On a more general topic, Tom B in particular, who were the winners and losers in terms of producing good performances that will have got Postecoglou thinking, he has got a future at the club? And equally, who's going to be out the door ASAP?
Well, it's so hard to tell, because they had one game against West Ham and they had one game against, a side that they would never have planned on playing. So there's so little to glean from that. But off the back of that, we did learn quite a lot. Kulusevski's son, Kane, seems to be the approach he wants to go with, as long as Harry stays. Not a shock there. He obviously wants to play 4-3-3. I think one player that could be quite interesting is Gio Lo Celso, who I think we all sort of wrote off as presumably wanting to leave and or likely to leave at least. And there were some stories in Spain, I think on the day of the game, emanating that Ange had convinced him to stay. And Ali Gold actually put it to him in the press conference. And Ange basically, he didn't confirm that he'd done that, but he did basically say that he was in his plans. And he impressed when he came on. And in fact, interesting, in the two games, he changed the whole team at halftime, and it was effectively what felt more like a B team, although he was very much like, don't read into my teams here at all. It's about fitness. But those teams almost seemed to pass the ball around a little bit better. And Lo Celso did impress. I know he scored against West Ham, didn't he? But he looked pretty good. So that will be interesting to see if he stays. It's a shame for Ndombele, because like I said, it looked like he was going to start that first game before he picked up that knock. So, you know, the Ndombelevers will be disappointed about that, and we'll have to see what goes on there. Højbjerg, interestingly, was going to start that second game in Bangkok against Leicester. again, how much you can read into these starting 11s, I don't know. But he is someone that I'm still expecting to leave, although I'm not quite as 100% sure that will definitely happen. I think it's up to anyone trying to come in for him. Atletico Madrid, we know, are interested, striking a deal with Spurs, and I would expect him to go. But I wouldn't be as sort of sure that was definitely going to happen as I was maybe a couple of weeks ago. From a defensive point of view, what was interesting is that he does seem to fancy Adogi and Porro in the same back four. And that kind of scares me, but very much excites me as well, I guess, going forward. Adogi did impress. He'd definitely be one of them. Porro, I'm not sure, had the best couple of games. But yeah, that could be very exciting. Anyway, I'll let Tom sort of see what he thinks as well from the outside point of view.
I was just wondering, Tom, where did Lo Celso, what was his role when he played? Because we've seen him in various roles of various different teams, and he's always, in my opinion, in Spain when he played, he was at his best when he kind of played slightly more advanced, almost as like a number 10. What was your impression of how Postecoglou thinks he can succeed in the team?
Well, yeah, he was part of that three in midfield and one of the more advanced ones, you know, along with Maddison, although I don't think they actually played together because Maddison started the two games and then came off, and then Lo Celso came on for the second half of the two matches. But definitely, you know, as we saw from the goal against West Ham, he's getting in the box, attacking more, looking to create things. But as I said, with the sort of second half teams in the two games, they knocked it about a bit quicker. And that was probably more exciting to watch. I mean, you could argue that both teams they were playing were more tired at that point, so maybe that helped. But yeah, I think in one of the more advanced, maybe number eight roles. So I mean, it's not guaranteed that he'll stay. As Ange said throughout, he was saying, like, I'm giving everyone a chance, but they may discover by the end of this period, not just on tour but during pre-season, that it's not for them. And maybe he'll be one of those, but it does seem like he could be someone that I would not be surprised if he did stay and had a bit of a role to play next season.
What was your impression, Tom, in terms of, I mean, I guess the big question before the tour, it feels like Postecoglou now, excuse me, has really got his sort of feet under the table. But before the tour, the big question was, are the players going to kind of take to his methods? You know, he was talking himself about, you know, it's not just about who I want to pick and who I want to get rid of. It's also about which players want to kind of buy into my ideas. Did you get any kind of sense of how much the players are kind of hooking into the kind of and ball thing?
Yeah, definitely. As you know, as you just said, it might not be for everyone. Even if they start off, you know, all enthusiastic, by the end of this transfer window, they may have changed their mind or might not think it fits them as well. But we spoke to quite a lot of players. You know, I think can think of Yves Bissouma, who's clearly been quite key already. And unprompted, when we asked about him about Ange, but we weren't really pushing him too much on what he thought. And he said he was almost like an uncle or a dad already. And that's something that's been sort of replicated by a few different players, particularly with Bissouma. We understand that Ange has been very much getting on to him, telling him how much a key player he sees him and how much he wants Bissouma to set an example to some of the younger players, because Ange very much wants to have this younger crop as well. He was talking up Pap Sarr ahead of that that final game, and Skip as well, both of them in his plans. I mean, you do have to caveat all of this. They've got such a massive squad that some have to go. I mean, 31 went, and then there were six left at home, mainly injured. Obviously, there was Hugo as well, albeit Alfie Whiteman unfortunately got injured as well ahead of that Lion City Sailors game, open training. But, you know, with no Europe, he's going to have to whittle that squad down massively. So even if there are players who are sort of up for it, there's only so many that can get on the bench, only so many can get the team. So there still will be players leaving. But yeah, definitely some of the young players and Bissouma seemed to be very much part of Ange's plans, and a lot of them buying into it. And also talking about how much fun it seemed to be. I mean, I think with Antonio Conte, we all knew how much he just worked on defensive shape again and again and again in training, which worked, you know, brilliantly for him at various different clubs, but obviously didn't work so well at Spurs, particularly last season. So it's not surprising that the players are enjoying playing sort of little games and less of the kind of train by rote kind of perspective.
What sort of impression did Vicario make?
Great in the interview that we did with him. His English was fantastic. I think I spoke to Dan in one of these podcast I did out there with him after that, and said, you know, it was the classic thing that Longley did last summer in Israel, say, apologizing for his level of English before he then spoke absolutely flawless English in the interview. But
yeah, but I meant more on the pitch in terms of being a proper replacement for Hugo.
No, true. Well, again, how much can you glean from a couple of games? I'd say I wasn't like massively sort of wowed from either performance. But he didn't do that much wrong. I didn't see him much, you know, putting his foot on the ball, which is what we're expecting to do, a bit like Jason Steele at Brighton. Didn't see that much of that yet. But then remember against Lion City Sailors, that, you know, I know they took the lead, but he didn't really have anything to do apart from that and barely touched the ball. So kind of hard to tell, really. I can't really go into too much detail on what he did because he didn't do that much. He made a really good save against Jarrod Bowen in that first West Ham game. So that showed his shot-stopping ability.
Tom, I don't know how you felt on the ground, but from a distance, when we were kind of picking up all these clips of Ange press conferences and things, it felt a little bit like he was a little bit sort of cranky during the trip, you know, maybe a little bit prickly here and there. I guess understandable given, you know, the constant questions about Kane, understandable given the kind of the Bayern reporter and the shirt thing. But did you think he was maybe, I don't know, finding the kind of stress of Spurs already kind of, you know, is it already kind of getting to him or was it not really like that? I mean, when you sat down with him, I imagine he was a lot more relaxed.
Yeah, I have to say I really like him. And all those things you mentioned about him being a bit cranky, I think he showed that as time at Celtic as well. He doesn't suffer fools gladly. And yeah, he was not impressed at all with that Bayern stunt. But that's fair enough, I guess. I mean, it seems like the Spurs fans very much enjoyed the way he sort of dealt with that. You could say maybe that he made more of a deal of it than he needed to, but I don't know. I was okay with it. And made for some funny remarks in the sort of later press conferences, you know, saying things like, let's get the show and tell out of the way now ahead of the third press conference. And, you know, I was in that first press conference when we got there at the WACA. I asked him straight out the first question of the press conference about Harry straight away. And he said, oh, question 1A, but that's fine. I'm all right with that. And he totally understands like where we're coming from. I've learned a few things about how to go about with him. I definitely, you know, don't interrupt him. He definitely seems to, when we did that sit down with him, he was so good talking about lots of different things, but one story he told was about meeting Alex Ferguson quite a long time ago after his Brisbane, I think it was his Brisbane Roar team, I can't remember which team it was, played at Man United. And he said it was so useful for him. But Fergie told him that he was going to hate doing the press stuff. And I asked him, like, what did he ask Fergie? And at first, I think he sort of took it as me saying, like, what did you say? What did you talk about? And his response was, you know, I get lots of people who come to want to spend time with me for 10 minutes and end up spending the whole time talking about themselves and don't learn anything. So I very much, you know, let Fergie do the talking. And so I guess that kind of gives you a bit of a window into don't go on too much with your own questions and like the sound of your own voice. He realizes that he's the one who's the center of attention, not in a quite reasonable way, to be honest. We're there to talk to him. We want to hear from him. Fans want to hear from him, not us. And he's got some great stories up his sleeve and some funny sort of put downs or responses that I think will make for, from a journalist's point of view, really good copy this year. And I can see Spurs fans really buying into him. Obviously, it's all dependent on the results, I guess, but I think they'll like his personality.
I think he's come over really well, I have to say, and I'm looking forward to you guys dealing with him on a regular basis. Now, you were brave enough to make the Harry Kane question the first question to him over there. I've saved it till just about last, but where are we? It seems to me as though he is going to go. Is it only a matter of time?
I mean, I think basically what we know at this stage, and this podcast could date quite quickly, I guess. You know, we're talking here on Friday morning, and, you know, the expectation is that Bayern basically are wanting talks now with Levy. Spurs have come back from the tour. They know that. Their executives deliberately stayed in Munich rather than going on the plane with the Bayern squad because they want to kind of get their biggest transfers, of which Kane is top of the list, done. Bayern was sort of briefing yesterday Thursday, that they want to have talks with Spurs, which sort of suggested that there wasn't a kind of concrete meeting organized. You know, I mean, if you want to have a meeting with someone, doesn't necessarily mean there is one, but equally that's what they were kind of briefing out. And we know that Kane's position is he's not going to sign a new contract this summer, and that he is open to the Bayern proposal, basically. I think at this stage, everyone is open to the idea of Harry Kane leaving. And that sounds like a wishy-washy thing, but actually in comparison to previous summers, previous years, you know, that is a big step, you know, that Bayern see it very much as an encouragement that they have an open channel of communication with Tottenham, that there is a willingness to speak. They think they can get a deal done. I think it's worth saying that from the Bayern side, there is a huge amount of confidence here. You know, they really think, they see it. We're Bayern Munich. Harry Kane is an incredible player. He's in the last year of his contract and he's playing for Tottenham. You know, with respect, they say he's playing for a team who aren't even playing in Europe this season. Why wouldn't we get him? You know, I mean, they sort of see this as a pretty standard transfer. Now, whether they're underestimating, you know, the Kane factor and the whole Daniel Levy factor, it remains to be seen. But I think it is worth saying that from the German side of things here, they believe a deal will be done. The big question, as we've said many, many times, is are they prepared to stump up the money? You know, and I think if they are, then I think they will get him. If they're not, then I think they'll walk away. There are other targets they could possibly turn to. But
if that happened, if it's now, as seems you've eloquently said, the time has come where I think Spurs realise, unfortunately, they've got to cash in on a £100 million asset. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Harry's already said no to PSG. Bayern remains the option. But will even the likes of Manchester United now suddenly be interested again if they realise that Tottenham are going to sell? Or equally, are Tottenham going to sell but definitely not to another English club? I realise there are a lot of sub-clauses in that particular question. But how complicated is this situation? Is it Bayern Munich or nothing? Or is anything now open?
I mean, Manchester United still aren't in the race as it stands. You know, let's see what happens. Let's see. But they are still saying that they're not. They have other targets, other priorities. I think that comes from the fact that when they did inquire earlier in the summer, they were given a fairly clear no from Spurs. Because as we know, there's a distinction between Premier League rival and foreign club. You know, Spurs are possibly prepared to sell abroad, but they're definitely not prepared to sell domestically. And I think United know that. Now, whether that translates to they have to pay 50 million more or whether that is just a firm, you know, you can pay whatever you want, we're not selling to you, who knows? But as it stands, Manchester United don't think that Kane is a viable option for them. It's worth saying that the Joe Lewis telling Daniel Levy's story came from the Manchester United pre-season tour. It came from all the journalists who were following Manchester United out there. That basically was something, obviously, they were told that Joe Lewis had told Levy that Kane needs to be sold this summer. That said, that wasn't accompanied with the idea that United suddenly see themselves as in the race. On PSG, we know that Kane's preference is that he doesn't want to go there. He's not interested in a move to France. Whether Pochettino has possibly warned him off joining them, I don't know. Very possible, in my opinion. He still keeps in touch with Poch. We know that. But let's see. PSG equally think they're in the mix. They think that they can match Bayern's offer, whatever gets accepted. And by the way, just lastly, you know, when a team does have an offer accepted, that would alert other clubs. You know, it's often a tactic of clubs. They let other teams do the negotiating and they say, okay, we'll match that. You know, we'll pay 5 million more, or we'll structure it even better for you. And they come in at the last minute and gazump them. So it's not impossible, I don't think, that other clubs come in and match Bayern's offer. But as it stands, Bayern are very much the ones doing the leading here.
And Tom B, during the tour, sorry to jump in, but I'm intrigued to know what sort of a figure Harry Kane cut. Was he completely kept away from you guys? And if he does go, were there any rumours circulating as to a possible successor?
Okay, so on the first question, it was very different to last summer in Seoul, where we spoke to Harry and he was quite open. We didn't speak to him at all throughout this whole tour. I did that event that I went to with where I did the Eric Dier interview, which is at this children's charity where they did these art pieces with the kids. Harry was at that. That was quite amusing. I was just sort of watching and an amusing moment where one little kid held her hand up to a high five, and as he went for it, she held her hand, did the old wee hand back, which is quite amusing. But yeah, no, that was literally the sort of nearest we got to him. I mean, he was very sort of amenable with all the fans, at matches, signed loads and loads of shirts. But yeah, the fact that he didn't speak to the media felt quite telling. I really do think there's a lot of poker being played here all over the shop. It does seem to really come down to whether Bayern will stump up that money to Tottenham. But then, you know, if that does happen, that will really put on the line whether he really does want to go there. I mean, all sort of signs point towards that he probably would. But it's only until they actually have a bid accepted where he really has to sort of make his decision. And I'm still wondering how that works out, particularly with a year left on his deal where he can have his choice of clubs, move to other English clubs. It'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. You know, back to Man United and PSG. Well, PSG have bid for Højlund, haven't they? If that's how I'm pronouncing it right, the Atalanta striker that Man United wants to sign. So there's a sort of subplot there. Man United, from what it sounds like, don't have the money to try and afford Kane, even if Spurs were open to selling to a domestic rival, which it doesn't sound like they do. Also in that story, interestingly, about Kane, you know, there was a suggestion that he wants 30 million a year in wages, which is obviously massive. He is one of the best players in the world, yes. But there's just so much going on that it's hard to see how it plays out. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to a replacement, I do think Richarlison will be the main plan, because Son can play up there as well. I wouldn't be surprised they went for a younger forward as well to bring in as well. But I don't really see them spending 80 million on a ready-made replacement. I think they feel like they've already got that Richarlison.
Okay. Well, as Tom A. rightly said, this could date very quickly, but we'll see. I think it's going to be a very emotional next few days for all Spurs fans for a variety of reasons. And then in terms of other business, the centre-back situation seems to have gone quiet. What's happening in terms of, I mean, we are now only 2 weeks away from the start of the season. We need reinforcements there, don't we?
You do. And, you know, Ange wants them done. He wants at least one. He said that publicly a few times. You know, it's quite, we know about some of the players they've been after. We talked about them before, Mickey van der Ven, Edmund Tapsabar. There's more than that as well. And ideally too, I mean, even the Ashley Phillips deal, which we were led to believe that was basically a done deal, but that seems even more complicated from Blackburn's sort of demands for him. And he's not even supposed to be one of these ideally two new centre-backs. He'd be a younger player to come into it. So they're having problems on that front. You do wonder, this is just a theory, but having looked at some of the games that Spurs had and the defensive problems they had against West Ham, whether sort of it's really brought to the forefront how much they need defensive reinforcements, and whether that would have a knock-on effect to selling Kane if they haven't got enough money to you know, splash elsewhere. They need that might accelerate that. I don't know. But they're also looking to let players go. And I have to say, personally, this Davinson Sanchez situation is really fascinating. They have accepted a bid from Spartak Moscow. Now, I can't think of any other players that have gone to Russia from the Premier League. And the player is reluctant to go, or at least he was a few days ago. I'm not sure if this situation has moved on. So it may well come to nothing. But the fact that they were willing to accept it, and it would have been legit with the Premier League, from what I'm told, like they would have all been fine on that front. But it's still the look that it has of accepting Russian money right now. I really, personally, I'm not a fan of that at all. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
No, we can just add that to the list of morally questionable issues that tend to surround Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. Well, listen, guys, Tom, great to have you back. Go and rest up for a few days, because when the Kane thing kicks off again, you're going to be a busy man. Tom A, lovely to see you. I think next week, if the Kane thing has reached a crescendo, we might need lots of tissues and whiskey and God knows what. But
one little thing to add is just to keep an eye on the Mbappe situation, because I was doing quite a lot on Mbappe this week rather than Spurs, and someone was very much saying that the Mbappe and Kane deals, you know, I'm not interlinked, but the market is kind of waiting on these two deals, you know, that and if PSG is suddenly flush with 150 million from Real Madrid or even 300 million from Saudi Arabia, then suddenly, you know, you could see a quite a quick domino effect on the strikers. You know, there are four or five strikers, you know, between four or five clubs, and we could see them all move around fairly quickly. So yeah, keep an eye on that. But yeah, lovely to see you guys and get some rest. Tom, you've had a busy summer.
I have. Yes. Thanks, guys.
Yes. All right. Cheers. That's Tom Barkley of The Sun, our Globetrotter, Tom Allnut of The Times. I am Marcus Buckland. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back possibly with some really big stories next week. But for now, from us all here on the Tottenham Way podcast, it is a case once again, of course, of come on, you Spurs.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.